Kirsten Browdy, I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Hi there, Marjorie.
Hello, Jim.
Joining us as he does once a month to take our questions and yours is the governor of the Commonwealth, Deval Patrick. Governor Patrick, it's good to see you.
What's up?
Excuse me? Now, if you have questions for the governor, my goodness.
I'm just trying to listen. This is my anecdote to hating winter. I have had enough of winter.
Is there an anecdote?
No.
Or was that it? Oh,
no,
you mean the was up,
no.
Was it?
Anecdote.
Oh, I say antidote. Got it.
Anecdote.
You know what I vowed? I'm not going to complain once all summer long, no matter how hot and humid it gets. Don't you think that would be good?
You're not going to remember that, but
yeah,
it's
but
a nice
idea. I like it hot and humid.
By the way, if you want to speak with the governor about the coming of spring or anything else, our number is 877-301-8897. And you can email him at bpr@wgbh.com. .org. Is that correct or is it news.org, ladies and gentlemen over there?
On the sign behind your head, it says WGBHnews.org.
Thank you, Governor.
And you can also see the governor correcting me on our live stream. This is at WGBHnews.org. Governor, it's good to see you.
It's great to see you and be seen.
Okay. So you just came from a big, I think you were there at this big press conference announcing the MBTA
late night service.
Yes, it's going to be starting March 28th.
That's correct.
What's the deal? What happened this morning?
So we were over in cold Kendall Square under a tent that seemed to be designed to protect your colleagues in the media and not those of us making the announcement. But we announced that that all T service the subways and the trolleys as well as buses will, or most bus lines, I should say, those that reach about 70% of the traveling public will run late night service beginning on March 28th on the weekends. And the other great news about this, and by the way, this is in response to students and restaurant goers and owners and workers and, you know, hospital workers and techies and so forth, who have said to us, a world-class city has a subway system that keeps the hours we do. And I'm glad we're able to do it, and we are able to do it in part because a number of private organizations and companies have stepped up to sponsor it. So we're going to try it out for a year. We're going to learn as we go, ask a lot of questions of riders and patrons and those whose employees or patrons depend on it so that we can refine the concept and go from there.
You're obviously convinced. Well, obviously, it's an experiment for a year, but I assume you're quite confident that the bad experience of 2005 won't be replicated. Why do you think this time it's going to be different?
You're talking about
Governor,
the Night Owl?
The Night Owl, the bus service, which obviously didn't cause there to be much ridership, and it got canned after a short period of time. Why are you more hopeful this time?
What Secretary Davey and Dr. Scott have said based on their study is that, one, it was buses and not the subway and trolley service, and that does make a difference. The second is we have different kinds of we have better technology now, so you can actually check on your app
where the next
bus or train is and how long it gets to you. And we're also trying to, I think the concept is to have waits in the 15-minute range rather than the half an hour, 45 minutes, as was the case in the past.
So March 28th is the kickoff.
March 28th.
One other thing, you were just mentioned before we went on the air about the women's event. We're going to talk about that in just a second.
Oh, that was great.
But just because it's in the news because I wrote a column about it, actually, and I felt so bad for a lot of these parents that I spoke with, the charter school issue. There's a bill up at the State House.
Did you write about that today?
I did. Okay. I wrote about it today. There's a bill up at the State House, as you know, which may or may not lift the cap on charters. It looks like it's not going to lift the cap on charters. I talked to State Rep Sonia Chan-Diaz yesterday, and
Senator.
She's concerned. Senator, excuse me, and she's concerned about the reimbursement that the state is not reimbursing the schools the total amount when they take kids out of the public schools to go to the charter schools. But I just wanted to ask you, because you grew up in a tough school system, and you know, you talk to parents. There was a lottery yesterday at the City on the Hill Charter in Roxbury, and not a single parent showed up. And I was surprised, but I found out that the reason they don't show up anymore is because it's too upsetting. You know, they've filled out one woman I spoke to had filled out 36 applications
wow.
trying to get her kids into charter schools, and she's not been able to do it. And they don't come because they just get too bummed out. So this bill is hanging by a thread. For people that don't know, there's this year there's 13,600 applications for 2,200 slots.
In Boston.
In Boston, that's correct. And, you know, you could – you're the governor. I mean, you could really push
but
hard.
Not the king, so
you're
be
not,
careful.
You're not the king. But what do you think – how do you react to that?
That's, well,
you know what these people are talking about, their struggle.
I do know what they're talking about, you know, and as the only governor in 30 years who's raised the charter cap, I'm a supporter of charter schools. I don't, as you know, think they are the you know, the sole solution to all that that ails us, and I think that the more – innovation and flexibility we're seeing in the district schools, the better results those district schools are getting. Orchard Gardens is just one example of – and just one example, but one frequently cited. I think there's going to be a good bill. I think there's more than there's a lot of negotiating in order to get to any piece of complex legislation. And the funding issue is real, Marjorie. That's not – particularly as the – as the number of charter schools grow. So having a conversation and really trying to wrestle through the funding question has to be, or I think it is reasonable for that to be a part of this this debate, and I think they may yet get there. There is a way to do this which is attractive to me. I'm not going to get to make the call, but it is attractive to me, and I've expressed that. And it has to do with the differences between where we are against caps in Boston, for example, and where we are in other communities. For you know, we are not up against the charter cap in many places in the Commonwealth, and we have caps that are specific to school districts. And so when people talk about raising the caps, they're mostly talking about Boston.
Right.
Or they're talking about one or two other urban centers.
Correct.
And it would be possible to think about taking – about giving the commissioner or the Board of Primary Secondary Education the authority to move charter authority around from community to community. So if there was not the demand in community X but there was in Boston, you could authorize that charter in Boston and still stay within the statewide statewide cap. That's one way, it seems to me, to have the kind of flexibility I think – that you were talking about in your column.
One question, Governor. You said to Marjorie a second ago, I think you said you were confident that it would be a bill. From what I've read, that Sonia Chang-Diaz has till the 19th, 6 days from now, to report something out of under whatever the legislative rules are. Are you convinced there will be something reported out of her committee?
You are right to call me on this. I am hopeful there will be a bill. I am not confident there will be a bill, but I think that there are a lot of good people. Both the advocates from outside and folks who are working on it in the legislature, including Senator Chang-Diaz, who want a good bill.
Last thing before we get to the calls, the number is 877-301-8970. We promise you 1 minute and then the governor is yours. We were speaking to Brian McGrory yesterday from obviously the Globe editor about your women's leadership initiative. And I know you know this, but for those who don't know, we have in one of the most progressive states in America, probably, I think you might know better, the single worst record of electing women to constitutional office in Congress anywhere in the country. It's not worlds better in the corporate world. You attempted with a $1 million grant the other day to at least begin the ball rolling in a more positive direction. Give us the short version of what you're doing and what the goal is here, Governor.
Well, there are two things. One, maybe three. It came out of taking a look back at the level of the numbers of senior women who lead this administration. And we are at, I think, over 51% at the manager level and about 46-47% at the senior
in your administration.
In our administration. Uh-huh. And they are amazing professionals and extraordinary contributors. And a couple of folks on the staff said, you know, we tend not to be very good at the bragging part of the job because we're always thinking about the next thing. So how do we do – how do we take how do we acknowledge that that achievement and at the same time reach for what's next? Because the fact is that the results in the private sector are not as good, and the things that we should be conscious of the things we can do better to make the workplace more successful for aspiring women in state government. So we did two things yesterday. We announced a task force of both government, private sector, not-for-profit professionals, men and women, to really think about and look at our existing policies and practices to make sure that the workplace is a welcoming place and a successful place for capable women, to take best practices from other governments as well as private employers and give me a set of actionable recommendations that we can implement either before I go or that I can hand over to my successor. And we also launched a fellowship program where we can bring in women at the graduate student level for a year or so of management experience to give them a chance to try it out. And that's, you know, the point is all of us who've had our opportunities have had the chance to try things out, to be mentored and coached as we went along to see where our strengths and weaknesses lie, and we want to be intentional about that with women. I have to tell you that the event itself, Jim, was electric. The room was full of, and to standing room, of appointees in the administration, on the bench, really, really amazing collection of talent and a lot of enthusiasm.
Why do you think, last thing on this, and then we will go to the calls, why do you think it has taken Massachusetts and so much of its public and private existence so long to catch up to equity in terms of women in leadership?
I'm talking about
corporate and electoral.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about
both.
Electoral. Well, you started, I should emphasize that the initiative is not about elected office seekers.
I understand that. I'm sorry. Yes, I understand that.
In terms of elections, I mean, I'm thrilled that Elizabeth Warren is representing us in the Congress. There are a number of really strong women running for governor right now, or for other statewide offices, and that's a good thing. I think that probably this is an area where you want to make sure that you've got a pool of talent, and then you want to let people make their judgments on the strength of the merits. And I think in the private sector, you know, it's interesting. I step back and reflect on your question from the perspective of race, which has been another challenge over time in the private sector, in C-suites, executive suites, mm-hmm. and in boardrooms. It's fascinating to me how many companies tend to go to the same people for their board seats. So you see, you know, friends of mine who are African American who are on multiple boards, and newcomers who are not on boards yet have trouble breaking in. And I think we've got to be intentional about opening up, in the case of women, that talent pool and making it known to people. I said to one person yesterday, they ought to take that attendee list from the event yesterday and hand it out to every CEO and every chair of a corporate board in New England, because there's your talent pool right there.
Fair enough. Let's get to the calls. He is Governor Deval Patrick. He's with us till 1 o'clock at 877-301-8970. Governor.
April is calling from Cohasset. April, are you there?
Hi, April.
Hi. It is an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I'm really stuck here. I've been dealing with unemployment for about 4 years now, since 2010, mm-hmm. and I've been calling, and they said that my case is in appeals, to not worry because I've been getting all these bills. And, of course, every bill has interest put on it. And, you know, for years of interest, it's accumulated quite a lot.
April, you're getting bills for what? I'm sorry.
For unemployment, because they had given me unemployment, and then they decided, we gave it to you. We shouldn't have given it to you.
Okay. So they're trying to recover unemployment payments paid that you're now told are not eligible for.
Right.
Okay.
I disagree with their decision, mm-hmm. and So right now I'm writing to the Board of Review, mm-hmm. and because I spoke to them March 8th, 2014, and they said, I don't know why they've been telling you your case was in appeals. It looks like some of them were dismissed, others are unknown. Mm-hmm. But I never got anything from the Board of Review. So they said they would, if I requested it, they would send out letters saying what the decisions were.
Okay.
However, they said the only thing I could do now is go to district court, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to. My question really is what do I do at district court? I'm not sure how to do this, and it's just.
I don't know. I'm sorry, April. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I don't know what the answer is to your question, but I will get it. If you want to hang on a second, I'll get your phone number and I'll have somebody follow up this afternoon.
April, don't hang up. One of our producers will get your number and give it to the governor's office. April, thank you for the call and good luck. Governor.
Let's see. Rick is calling from Chelsea. Rick?
Hi, Rick.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
Good. I had a question about the Tobin Bridge. Mm-hmm. Been living up on property in Chelsea like years ago. And I was wondering why there's no bike lane or pedestrian lane on the Tobin. So close to the city.
Yeah.
Like, what, an hour with public transportation? Or like bus, boat shuttle, something.
Are you biking at this minute?
No, getting into the truck. I'm a dog walker.
Oh, okay. Because it sounds like you're
breathless.
Your cell service is breaking up a little bit. Or I wondered if you were breathless. I don't know why there's no bike lane on the Tobin Bridge. We're going to do some work on the Tobin Bridge. Actually, it's underway right now to remove the toll booths and have open road tolling up there in the next few months. It's a good time to ask the question, and I'm happy to. If you want me to come back to you with the answer I learn, hang on and we'll get a number.
Rick, you do the same thing, just to stay on hold. Our producers will get the number from you as well. Governor.
Great. Steve is calling from Milford. Steve, you there?
Governor, thank you.
Bad phone day. We lost Steve. That was not us. Let's just be clear. Our number is 877-301-8970. Steve, please call back. Governor, before we take another call, you're the person appointed head of the Gaming Commission who was picked. He and his colleagues have picked one slots parlor. They're about to pick as many as three casinos in the next few months. He's quoted in the Herald yesterday as saying, "The time is now. It's upon us. We can't wait any longer, even though we're still in the middle of casino licensing. This is about online gaming." How do you feel about yet the next step?
God, really?
Yeah, really.
First of all, I mean, you should probably ask the chairman, but my understanding is that the point he was making is the exact opposite of jumping with both feet into online gaming right now. But I'll leave that to him. That's my understanding from him. You know, it feels to me like we are being very careful and very deliberate, appropriately so, about stepping deeper into gaming. And for all the complaints the commission has sometimes had to deal with, I think they have been appropriately careful about how they've done that. And I'd say that one thing at a time. Because this is a big experiment for us, right? I think the public is still with us, but it's got to be done. It's got to be done right. So
just to be clear, your understanding is Steve Crosby meant the opposite of what the word suggests.
That is my understanding, but you should ask him.
Okay,
that,
we will. Fair enough. Let's try the phones again, Governor.
Let's see. Did we get Rick back?
No, he's not back. It's very sad, but okay. We'll give him a chance in a few minutes.
So John is calling from Quincy. John, you there?
Hi, John.
John from Gardner.
Hi, John.
We have two Johns. John from Gardner. Hold on a couple of minutes. John from Quincy. You are next. Hi, John from Quincy.
Hi, Governor. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Your administration is increasing fees with the registry. I'm just trying to see like what's the reasoning behind that.
When we, John, just for those who may not know what we're talking about, but everybody knows this, right?
People are big on that.
Yeah, there was a vote yesterday at the MassDOT board to raise fees at the registry. And, John, the reason we're doing that is because last year that we did the transportation?
I don't know. I thought it was 2 years ago.
Might have been 2 years ago. But when we had the revenue issues. We were trying to raise money for transportation for education. I think it was last year. I hate the winter. What we got from the legislature was a couple.
It was last year. You're right. Of course, it
was a couple of different tools to raise money for transportation, and one was to increase fees and tolls, and to do it periodically. In the case of most of the RMV fees, they have not gone up in a long, long time. Nobody likes it. I mean, I don't like it, but it is. It is meant to help us meet the costs of the transportation system that people say they want. And it's not going to be enough, but it's a contribution.
John from Quincy, thank you so much for the call.
You know, one quick thing I wanted to interject here, because no one's asking about it, so I will, although we in the media have been accused of focusing too much on this. This whole brouhaha about the St. Patrick's Day Parade in South Boston, mass equality.
Is that coming up?
Sunday.
Yes. Are you going to sing this year?
Oh, God.
The governor has sung in past years at the breakfast.
Yes,
correct.
So that has happened. That has happened.
Okay.
You know what?
What?
I have to tell you that that the speaker and the Senate president and I should speak for myself, but I think it's also true of them. Dread the breakfast. It is, you know, it's fun. It's often witty, but until you sit down again after you've done your thing, it is a miserable experience. Absolutely miserable experience. That you know, you kind of go in half knowing you're going to bomb. Fortunately for me, this will be my, I think, ninth one.
Because oh, you're a candidate?
I went once as a candidate. And as a candidate, you have to stand. You know, you have to stand off to the to the wings. And I think I was the last one on the first time I went.
But last year you made up an excuse as to why you couldn't be there, so you sent in a video. Do you remember that?
I didn't make up an excuse. I had a reason.
Although,
sorry. You had a doctor's appointment on a Sunday. You got his teeth drilled.
I feel like I'm coming down with something right now.
It is tough. I mean, careers can be made and broken at the breakfast, which I've covered a few times. It can be a long 3 or 4 hours. Jim is going to cover the entire thing from beginning to end.
Maybe
he's become legendary as the host extraordinaire of the breakfast.
Thanks.
But anyway, as people know, and you certainly do, mass equality represents gay, lesbian groups is given up. They're not going to try to march in the parade. Mm-hmm. They're going to be in the back of the parade, a mile back in the parade, along with the Veterans for Peace and some other groups. Tina Cherry, actually, who's
Lewis
done a lot of great
peace
work in Dorchester, she's going to be in that parade and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder what you make of this parade. To me, it's sort of it's become an embarrassment for mm-hmm. Boston that a million people are going to show up for a discriminatory parade, which is basically what it's become. Mm-hmm. Even though they have the right under the Supreme Court decision to bar whoever they want to from the parade, mm-hmm. it's no gay, no Veterans for Peace parade.
Well, you know, I'm disappointed too. I like the people who organize the parade, and I have tremendous respect. And I try to support the folks who've been excluded for the parade because of the very good work that they do. Things change slowly. You know, I think the public is probably where you are in terms of the interest in an inclusive parade. You know, its day will come, and we have fortunately. A strong and well-earned and deserved reputation as a commonwealth for being an open place, and I don't think that the parade blots out that reputation.
Let's take another call before we take a brief break. He is Governor Deval Patrick. He's at 877-301-8970 with you till 1 o'clock. Governor.
Bob is calling from Webster. Bob, are you there?
Hello, yes.
Hi, Bob.
You there? Thanks.
Taking my call.
Thanks for holding on.
I'll try to be brief. My wife and I pay more than 50% of our adjusted gross income to health care insurance premiums alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're very excited about the new Affordable Care Health Act, and we're trying to sign up online through the Health Connector.
Mm-hmm.
And as we did that, we ran into a spot where it said, we can't verify you online. Mm-hmm. You need to call the help number. We called the help number, and my call to you is about the training of the people who are on these lines and what information they actually know and don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We were told we had to drive to Boston with our driver's license and show them our driver's license. This is the only way we could apply for assistance.
Oh, gracious.
Also,
from Webster?
From Webster. Mm-hmm. Also, they said the only, once you signed up for a plan, you could not change it. It would take 6 to 8 weeks to get a reply as to whether you were granted assistance. Well, our deadline is April 1st, so 6 to 8 weeks would put us beyond April 1st. And they said, well, then you really can't go for assistance because you'll be beyond your deadline. If you're not granted assistance, you'll miss the plan and you'll be uninsured. We drove to Worcester and spoke to a very nice woman there mm-hmm. who said, no, that's not true. I can sign you up online here for the assistance program. Just show me your license. She did it in Worcester. Mm-hmm. And she also said that sign up for whatever plan you want now, and if you're granted assistance, that's considered a change of your status, and you can then change your plan because of that. Mm-hmm. And so my comment is that the people on the Health Connector phone
You're getting two different instructions.
About something that's fairly important to our life.
Sure.
And so you don't really know who to believe. Mm-hmm. At one point, I was asking for a phone number to get to the Worcester office, and they said they gave me a phone number, which actually turned out to be the mayor's office in Boston. So there's all this misinformation going around, and I was just hoping that some way people would be able to be better trained about something that's this important to a lot of us out here in the field.
So, Bob, first of all, let me ask you, are you in the so-called AA coverage? Are you in the temporary coverage so your health insurance won't lapse as of the end of the month?
No, we are not in any temporary coverage at this point. I don't even know what that is. Okay. We are going to sign up for the plan, the full rate plan
right.
for us, which is over $800 a month each, $1,600 a month, because mm-hmm. we have no other option at this point. We haven't been contacted as far as the assistance program or anything else at this point.
Okay. So first thing I want to say is when we finish staying on the line, and I'll make sure that that your situation is dealt with. But on the broader question about the service you've gotten on the Connector phone line, first of all, I apologize for it. We've been adding people at a pretty good clip, hundreds of new people to come on, frankly, to help deal with the ways in which the website has failed us. And if you're not getting good information from the people on the phone, then the very reason they're there for is not being served, and I will look to that. I understand that Optum, which is the expert we brought in that helped fix the federal website and is supplying us with the people, has pretty rigorous training, but not by your description, to be sure. So I will look into that.
Bob, do
but,
not
but
go
hang
away.
But hang on, yeah, please, and we'll get your contact information and take it from there.
Thank you, Bob. Before we take a quick break, the Globe reported this morning early that the House is reporting out a minimum wage bill. House in Massachusetts, $10.50 an hour with reform to the unemployment insurance system. As you know, the Senate voted on an $11 hike. Are you going to get in the middle of that House and Senate? I know the minimum wage matters a lot to you
yeah.
and your friend, the president. Are you going to get in the middle of this, I guess, dispute, for lack of a better expression, between the House and the Senate?
I don't think it's fair to call it a
difference
dispute.
Of opinion.
Well, this is the process, right? And you bet your life I'm going to get in the middle of it. I'm supporting enthusiastically an increase in the minimum wage. I am also supporting enthusiastically some updating of our unemployment insurance system. I think it's not a bad thing at all that we're doing them at the same time. And I think it is natural and customary for the Senate to be in one place and the House to be in the other and to work out those differences. You know, the Senate took some action, I want to say a couple months ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and the House is going to take some action today, and that then sets up the opportunity for them to work it out, and I'm going to do what I can to help them get to
you. Are you going to fight for the higher number, for the $11?
Well, you know what? I have on purpose, Jim, stayed away from embracing one number because I think it is easier to help broker. The range, I mean, if the House really does come in at 1050, there's not that much difference between the two numbers. Some of the concerns from the business community will be the speed with which it's implemented, you know, what's the phase-in mm-hmm. Period so they can deal with it. And there are going to be issues, I am almost certain, about how to get in the same place on unemployment insurance reform. But this is a really positive step forward on both of these fronts, and I'm glad for it.
Fair enough. He's Governor Deval Patrick. Very brief break, about 60 seconds, and then more of the governor and you till 1 o'clock right here on WGBH Radio.
Well, a St. Patrick's Day Celtic Sojourn reflects the relaxed nature of a Celtic Sojourn, the radio program.
WGBH's Brian O'Donovan.
We are adding a third show in Worcester this year. Central Massachusetts is a very Irish area and has a lot of folks there as well who are interested in Irish culture. Bringing a St. Patrick's Day Celtic Sojourn to Worcester is a natural extension of what we've been doing for the last 8 years.
Reserve your seats at wgbh.org/Celtic.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Lahey Health, committed to providing leading-edge care right in your community, helping you become and stay healthy all through your life. You can learn more at LaheyHealth.org. That's LaheyHealth.org. And JLL, Jones Lang LaSalle, has shortened its name, but not its commitment to providing global real estate advice, market insight, and service. More information at JLL.com/Boston.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan, and our sidekick. Well, he's not our sidekick. Our guest. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking there for a minute. You want to be in radio or something? You're looking for
thinking.
Work, right?
I am looking for work. Well, what's maybe the pay like?
It's not real good, but the satisfaction is huge.
Is that
trust
right?
me, it
well,
is. Yeah.
I think it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
we can't complain.
In any case, Governor Deval Patrick is here, as he is every single month for an hour. Ask the governor to take your questions. Governor, let's go back to the phones.
It's okay with you. Steve is back from Milford. Steve?
Hi, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi, Jim and Marjorie.
Hi, Steve.
My wife, who listens to Jim and Marjorie every day,
thank
is,
you.
Unfortunately, one of the thousands of Massachusetts residents that suffers from a very devastating case of disseminated Lyme disease and other tick-borne co-infections.
Mm-hmm.
So, first, Governor, I want to thank you and your administration for all the awareness you're bringing to Lyme disease and other tick-borne co-infections. May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month, and you appointed a task force to raise awareness, et cetera, and thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
And second, I wanted to bring your attention to a bill that's in the Massachusetts legislature right now. It's H-989, and if passed, it's a bill that would require insurance companies to pay for the treatment of Lyme disease.
Do they not
right
now?
They will only cover the first 28 days of treatment. But in for many, many people, like my wife, if it gets beyond a certain point, then treatment can last for years.
Wow.
You are out of pocket 100%, and you can be spending thousands or tens of thousands of dollars.
And this is the antibiotic kind of the regimen of intense antibiotics you get at the—
Yes, yes, including IV antibiotic treatment in many cases because it can become neurological and disseminated through— every system in your body. The bill had its first hearing in the House Financial Services Committee back in the autumn.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's in, I think, an organization called CHIA, I believe. They have to analyze the financial impact of the bill.
Yeah, this is the entity that came out of the cost containment bill, yes.
Okay. Well, it seems to just be stuck there. So those of us who have family members and our patients ourselves are really desperately looking for some momentum on this bill. So if there's anything you can do to just persuade CHIA and the legislature to move this forward so that there can be some financial relief to those of us who are dealing with this.
So, Steve, I will check on it at CHIA. CHIA is independent. And they're supposed to do their analysis without involvement from me or people like me. I'll check and see what the status is and try to get a sense of when it may come out. And I will get informed about it as well.
Steve, thank you for the call and good luck to your wife.
Yes.
We appreciate it. Governor, let's go back to the phones.
Let's see. Lisa is calling from Cambridge. You there, Lisa?
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I was calling about the access path that goes between the North Cambridge neighborhood and the back entrance to Alewife T Station.
Under Route 2?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually, the path is actually on our side.
Okay.
Route 2. It's between the playing field and the station entrance.
Okay. Yep.
It really floods. all the time. It's there's a huge dip in the path.
Uh-huh.
Water collects, and it's gotten bigger and bigger. And you know, when you go through it, people are sort of mincing along the mud.
Oof.
They stay out of like what's become now like a foot of water.
Wow.
And it's also an access path for a whole neighborhood, and also all the public housing that's on Ringe,
mm-hmm.
which also has a lot of disabled people living there. So mm-hmm. it's forcing people to go out to cross at Route 16, which is a pretty dangerous road. Somebody got killed there recently.
Hmm.
And the reports that I'm seeing in our neighborhood emails suggest that somebody is saying it's going to cost like $300,000 to fill this dip, and I wonder why we can't just fill it and crown it so the water flows off instead of collecting like a swimming pool.
Is there drainage in the tunnel?
It's not under the tunnel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The tunnel sort of sits right under Route 2, which sits between the main station and this particular entrance, which
okay.
is at the inbound side of the platform.
Okay.
There is a water area, and I guess they're saying, oh, well, this is a wetlands situation, and I guess the land is owned by W.R. Grace, but, you know, if it's owned by W.R. Grace, it's probably not, you know, a pristine land that...
Hmm. Well,
it's been years,
I'm sorry.
Like this. Sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, that's pretty much all I had to say. It's just been a long time, and we don't seem to be able to get anywhere with it.
Is it all the time, or is it when it rains or there's thaw
wet.
Like this?
Yeah, when it's wet.
Yeah. Let me find out about it. If you want to hang on, we'll get a number. I'll ask the folks at the T to check on it for you and for me, and they can come back to you with whatever their plan is.
Sent an email, so there's more information in that email.
Did you send the email here to the station?
I did.
Okay.
Oh, they'll forward it to the governor's okay. office, Lisa. So stay on hold, and they'll check for it. And thank you kindly for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Governor, the Herald is reporting this morning that this Child Welfare League out of D.C., this watchdog group that's looking into the Department of Children and Families,
yep.
is supposed to have come out with some preliminary findings today. Do you have any heads up on what they're going to say?
Yeah, I've been briefed on it. So this is the national agency we asked to come in and,
yes.
and give a look at whether the policies we have are the policies we need. And they aren't done, and they won't be probably until May. But at the time they were appointed, I said – publicly, I asked them to tell us your progress about halfway through, and we would tell the public. And that's what this what this progress report is. I don't think there are any surprises. I mean, they make the point about that I and others have made about the importance of increasing the staffing, so we have more social workers to do the work, and we're making some progress there. And the legislature is moving through the supplemental budget to give us the funding to do that, and we may actually get that supplemental budget out of the legislature today, which is really good news. Technology was another thing that they raised, so that the people who are making these decisions have up-to-the-minute information, which has been a really serious problem for a long time. They talk about there was a story about the teen runaways. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because I know you've defended Olga Roche, and she's the head of the DCF, and I've interviewed her, and she's a really lovely person. But I think there was kind of a crisis in confidence beyond the original crisis in confidence when she testified up in Beacon Hill, and she was asked if she could say whether every one of the 36,000 children was healthy and cared for. And
you know, the reason you're smiling is because nobody could say yes to that,
but she did say yes to it. And then we found out that hundreds of kids were missing. So it does undermine confidence.
So can I just say two things? First
sure.
of all, I, my understanding is that she was answering a question about the 0 to 6, the kids who were in that in the group that
Jeremiah Oliver
right.
Was from. She's spoken with the chairman about that. And my understanding is they understand each other. But can I also just want to take sort of friendly objection to the kids being – the runaways being missing. In fact, they're mostly not missing. They know at DCF when a child is running. Remember, they're not in lockdown.
Right.
Right? These are not kids who are placed in confinement. They're placed in foster homes, and sometimes teenagers run away. In fact, not too long after that, I think the story that was – the individual who was reported on in – in your paper's story, was processed the way it normally that those situations are processed, and was found and returned to the home within a couple of days. I heard one story about a kid, social worker. Talked about one of the kids who was a teen runaway and who had called the social worker and said, look, I need a break from the foster home for a while. I'm fine. I'm not going to tell you where I am, but I need a break, and I'm going to come back in a couple of days. I mean, these are not ideal situations, but remember, and you know, to your point and others, I acknowledge the anxiety we all have when a child welfare agency doesn't have track of a given of a given child. I totally get that, but I think the point to remember here is that so many of the issues we have come down to the and I think the Child Welfare League is telling us this in their progress review so far, come down to having enough people, enough professionals to do the assignment that they have. And enough, and the right, and the timeliness of information to do that assignment, and those are things we are working on. And on Commissioner Roche, look, if I thought it served the best interests of children to change out the leadership at DCF, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But I'm not convinced that it does, and I think that the stability of the agency with all this incoming right now is actually pretty important to the safety of the children, at least until we get through the review of the policies and we see what we must do to update those policies and those practices.
Okay,
let's go back to the calls. Governor,
let's see. Ed is calling from Georgetown. Ed, you there?
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I know you're having some changes this year with the housing authorities. And I want to give you an incident that happened. I won't tell you where unless you want it off the phone,
okay.
Off the air.
Okay.
We had an incident with, we had a woman here that was on the board. She still lives here, but she was probably about 80 years old. And they had an incident. Her, she and one of the other women went into the office that had talked about her checks procedure.
Mm-hmm.
They had kind of an argument. And this director pushed and slapped this woman who was almost 80 years old.
Good grief.
And she was never, ever reprimanded.
Wow.
And we couldn't do anything about it because she had control of the board and she had him wrapped around her little finger. And it was a bad incident. I fought like a son of a gun and I tried to get rid of her. The police were called.
Wow.
They wrote her up.
Yeah.
And the police chief came in and said, non-incident. And because she's got a lot of people wrapped around her fingers, and it's a sin, but she gets away with everything.
Did the...
I know there's other things happening with other authorities, so I know there's got to be some changes. I'm glad you're doing that.
I'm trying.
But I'm...
Was it a resident who was pushed and slapped, the 80-year-old you talked about?
Yeah, she's a resident, but she was also a member of the housing authority.
Did she file charges?
Well, the funny part of it is this director knew she screwed up, so she turned around and hired a lawyer and sued her for abuse.
Please call me at the Boston Herald and leave your number, and we could have somebody look into this. I'm sure you want the number for the governor, but
and you want to give me that offline rather than
and Miss Eager might want to call me. I can give her a little bit extra information.
Yeah,
leave
the number and I will call you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Hey, Ed, thank you. Don't go away.
Yeah, hang on, please.
Now, Governor, if I can just for a second, I know I've been told by people close, you're very frustrated that no one has asked you the following question. So
I'm going to get into
the breach. Can you, I don't know how to put this, can you imagine a situation at some, I don't know, undefined point in the future, under certain as yet undefined circumstances when you might seek higher office? I know you haven't been asked that question, but I'm posing it to you now. Can you address that directly, please?
I have no plan, Jim.
Fine, okay. Fine.
I have no plan to make a plan.
Okay, fine. The only reason I ask that is because Marjorie is dying to ask you a question. She's been talking about for a week since a picture in the Herald. Go ahead, Marjorie.
I am. You know, I saw you coming down the plane with the steps of Air Force One with the President of the United States. I believe you had a camel hair coat on and a quite an impressive red scarf or whatever. I am dying
blue,
to know.
Given to me
was
by
it blue?
My wife.
I am sorry. I thought it was red. So I'm dying to know. What is the swankest thing? If you're going to tell somebody I was on Air Force One and this is the most impressive thing, is there one or two things you can tell me?
It was very cool.
Yeah.
I was telling Jim this story before you came in the studio.
I was fixing my hair.
But you look marvelous.
Thank you.
By the way, we had been at this event in Hartford to support the minimum wage, and all of my colleagues from the region, or most of them, had come down to express our support as well. And then the president had business here afterwards, so I was invited to fly from Hartford to Boston with him, and we get on the plane, and of course it starts to move as soon as he's on board, right? And I don't know where I'm supposed to go, you know what I'm supposed to do, but so I'm directed into his little office.
It's like a living room kind of deal, right?
Well,
you're not sitting in a regular.
It's a series of living rooms, but his space is special. So I'm sitting there with him, and he says, welcome aboard Air Force One. And I said, well, thank you, Mr. President. He said, have you ever been on Air Force One before? And I said, well, no, not in your administration, because, in fact, in the Clinton administration, I had an opportunity to fly with the president.
Didn't know that.
As well. And he said, well, welcome aboard. And I said, Mr. President, well, thank you. I said, but really? He said, what do you mean? I said, Hartford to Boston? Really? That's all you got? And he started to laugh, and he said, well, we could go by way of Tokyo if you want. And I said, we don't have time for that, but maybe by way of Chicago or something like that. I mean, it's a 15-minute flight.
That's a good point.
Anyway, it was great.
You didn't give any detail. They're like,
what's classified? It's classified.
I mean, are there the glasses, or maybe the bathroom is really special?
There was no time to go to the bathroom or have a drink that matter.
It was hot tubs.
I don't know.
Brass, faucets or something.
There are a lot of napkins and things like that say, welcome aboard
High-end
Air Force
liquor.
One. There wasn't time for that either.
Gosh.
Hey, Governor,
I'm disappointed.
One last.
15 minutes might be enough for you.
That's right. I'll have a quick one.
Fill her pockets. Governor, before we leave this topic, though, on a serious note.
I got some
note,
Hershey's Kisses.
Oh, that's pretty
with
good.
With a presidential seal?
Yeah, so
you didn't get any food either?
No. There was no time,
that's
what I'm saying.
No time. Yikes. Okay, all right, Jim.
Governor, before
we
leave
this,
on talk shows of late, when they talk about successors, you know, is Hillary Clinton running, not running? Your name has been brought up, and don't worry, I'm not going to ask you the same old tired question, at least not this month. If Hillary doesn't run, who does? If Hillary does run, who's a vice president? Your name comes up in that category. Virtually every time I have heard your name mentioned as a potential presidential candidate sometime in the future, almost without exception, somebody, and not some reactionary redneck, says, well, let's face it, there aren't going to be two black guys in a row in the corner office. When you hear that, and I'm sure you have or have read it, and what's the reaction you have?
Well, I think to myself, nobody says, we can't have two white guys in a row.
And that's it?
What else?
Well, there's got to be more. There's a piece of you that puts right over the edge.
I mean, there's
a,
there's look, I'm, I'd probably have more to say about it if I were actually running. I think it says something about the progress we've made and the novelty of it. I think there's always room and always appetite for visionary leadership and for competence in whatever package it comes in.
Fair enough. Let's go back to the calls. He's Governor Deval Patrick.
Let's see. John is calling from Boston. John, you there?
Hi, John.
Yes, I am here. And first of all, let me say that I think it's a great privilege for me to be able to speak with you, and I thank you for your time, certainly.
I feel there's a butt coming.
Yes, well, I guess we all come with some issues on our minds, so
sure.
I am not dissimilar from that.
Sure.
I am calling because I just wanted to get your thoughts about Bridgewater State Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that you have spoken fairly recently about the, unfortunate death of a mentally ill young man there back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And while Bridgewater State certainly is a psychiatric hospital, it has the feel and the culture of a correctional facility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different from a hospital. And so I just wondered what your thoughts were about this given the fact that I just simply find myself concerned sometimes about the patients there.
Yeah, yeah, and I appreciate your question, and I share some of those concerns. I think the case you're referring to is the Messier
Joshua
case, where I hate to call him an inmate because he wasn't actually he wasn't criminally confined.
He had mental illness.
He had mental illness issues, and in the course of the use of restraints, he died. And I think that the there's a civil case right now that the Attorney General is involved in around the culpability of guards and others in that death. I'm really troubled by what I understand to have been the circumstances. It feels to me like there is probably at least some negligence there. I shouldn't say at least, that there is some negligence there. What we did investigate very thoroughly with the help of the leadership of Secretary Cabral is how that incident was documented and followed up on, because there are a whole series of procedures that are supposed to be followed and were not. And as a result of that, there was some disciplinary action taken. I'll also say that I think that the use of the so-called four-point restraints, I mean, sometimes the restraints were used to restrain pregnant mothers while giving birth.
Oh, that was awful.
That's over now. As a result of emergency regulations we put in place, we're looking at a more limited use. Obviously, you want to impose these limitations on the use of restraints consistent with the safety of the corrections officers and other staff and other of those who were detained. But I think we can do a better job, and we're trying to get down that path now.
One last thing about this. I know you initiated some disciplinary procedures and those sort of things. My recollection was in post this 2009 incident that the medical examiner in the case said that it was a homicide. There was no prosecution by, I think his name is Cruz, the district attorney there. Are you in, I don't even know if it's appropriate, are you involved in any discussions, whether it's with Cruz's office, Martha Coakley's office, about whether or not, in light of the Globe story by Mike Resendez, the action taken by your office?
Who did some amazing reporting.
Resendez, yes, we agree. Yeah. Are you involved in any discussions, or have you heard anything about whether or not any criminal prosecutions actually will happen in this case?
No, I think I haven't been in touch with your offices, to your question. I've read that the DA has decided not to prosecute it. And by the way, that's not – I mean, without knowing all of his or his staff's analysis, you know, homicide doesn't necessarily mean it's intentional. It can also be – a homicide simply means a person died at the hands of another. And I do think, by the way, the supposition that a homicide implies intentionality – had something to do with why some of the procedures at DOC were not followed in the wake of the death.
Governor, before you go,
yes,
we only have a minute left. You are going out of the country to Panama. Is it Panama, Mexico?
Panama and Mexico.
What's it?
Yes,
you've been doing these trade trips, for lack of a better.
That's not the reason. Thank you very much.
It's a nice sidelight.
Are you content that the other day, by the way, someone who is ordinarily incredibly critical of everything you do praised you when this Dubai to Boston Emirates flight thing says this wouldn't have happened. This is a commentator, wouldn't have happened without the governor's involvement in these trade missions and that sort of thing. What real benefit have we seen from a number of the
missions?
Trips you've made? Yeah, we only have a minute because I know
you've
got to go
you,
too.
Since time is limited, I'll give you just one example. There was an independent study done, I think, last year on the benefits to Massachusetts of the trade mission we did to Israel 2.5 years ago. And among the conclusions were that we had a faster increase in new businesses from Israel than in the average business creation rate here in the Commonwealth, which is already pretty high, that the trade between us has increased by hundreds of millions of dollars, and there are jobs associated with that. And one of those companies we met there, just as an example, a company called Desalitech, We met there on that trade mission. They decided, as a result of that trade mission, to come here and establish their U.S. headquarters in Boston. They traveled with us to Japan on a trade mission and did a deal in Japan out of their Boston office, and they are going with us to Panama and Mexico as well for the same reasons. This matters, and we're getting great uptake. And what is, I think, in the more intangible space, people around the world, commercial interests around the world, are appreciating that that Massachusetts is a global economic player, and that's good for us.
Governor, it's good to see you.
Thank
you. We'll see you in April.
Great to be with you.
Happy March. Winter will be over by then, by the way. I don't know if you're aware.
From your lips to God's ears.
And by the way, as we say every month, every email or tweet that we receive that we didn't get to will be forwarded to the governor's office.
Yeah, and we didn't get to a lot. I have to apologize for that. I'm sorry. Anyway, Governor Deval Patrick joins us every month for Ask the Governor. And again, Governor Patrick, thank you.
Great to be with
for
you.
Being with us. Up next, we're asking you about online gaming. We just asked the governor, and now we'll ask you. Is it time for Massachusetts to tap into this virtual pot of gold? You can do it in your pajamas from the couch as well. That's next on 89.7 WGBH.
I didn't know that was an option for me.
That's right. You just never know where this could lead. That's up next on Boston Public Radio.